Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Today, a very interesting show and one that I think will connect the dots for me personally on some things. We're going to be talking with Jerry Massey, who wrote a book entitled Bad Baptist Pastors. The Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers is the actual title. The Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers. And some of you may know, my wife Sherry and I met and were married in 1984. We were both students at Liberty University. So that was I already had been in the world of Baptist fundamentalism as a teenager, seeking help for my family, for my father, and through a family friend, was influenced by a friend to go to Liberty University. And I got exposed to this whole big world of fundamental Baptists. Jerry Falwell was the chancellor at our school. And for me, it was a very totalitarian environment. In the sense that we had all these rules that were very rigid rules. We couldn't go to movie theaters. Of course, I broke that and snuck out and went to movie theaters, and people told me I was almost of the devil for going to a movie theater. But we had to wear ties, so we had to have short hair, couldn't listen to rock music. Of course, people broke that, and you'd hear rock music on campus, and you'd get in trouble if you were playing it. But even to the right of Falwell were these guys, Jack Howes and Bob Jones. Jerry, who's coming on in a minute, went to Bob Jones and had earned a bachelor's and master's at Bob Jones. And many of us who ended up in this movement, this very strict kind of religious right movement, come from dysfunctional families. My father was a very talented guitar player but suffered bipolar disorder. There was a lot of chaos in our home. And I went into this thinking, well, this will save my dad, this will save my family, Jesus will save the whole thing. But it was kind of like going from the frying pan, into the fire, because there was this sexual abuse that I wasn't aware of when I first started, but gradually started to see. The youth pastor molested a couple people related to me, and I can't get too personal about that to protect the confidentiality of others who haven't really permitted me to go into that too much. But I will say that a youth pastor, and more and more of this has come out through the years as people talk, and a Baptist pastor who was like a surrogate father figure to me, very close to me, found out had molested his own daughter. And the thing that was so weird for me, I was a young man, and I guess I'll get to Jerry here in a few seconds, but the thing that was so weird to me was just the reaction, or the lack of reaction, that this was treated as more and more of these cases of these big Baptist pastors came out to be pedophiles. It was treated like it was no big deal. And as a young kind of man, just not even mature myself, I thought, this is kind of strange. They acted like it was a little lapse or a little, stray from grace, but God's grace covers it. And the wives would just stay right with the married to the men that were molesting their own kids. Very, very strange. So we're going to be back and examining this this great author, Jerry Massey, who's coming on. She has done us such a service. She has written a bunch of books, but the Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers is encyclopedic in the sense it literally lists from A to Z, I think about 100 of these pastors who have pretty much gotten away with this serial sexual abuse of children. And so I want to get right to her. So don't go anywhere. This is going to be a fascinating 25 minutes with Jerry Massey, and I'll be right back with Jerry on Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Jerry.
Hi, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show and coming into the studio line here. And thank you for this service, because I have just been scratching my head for years, and you're helping me to understand all this. We have a lot in common. I've read both your books here, Schizophrenic Christianity, Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers, and you've also written a lot of great fiction, by the way. And by the way,
thank you.
Can our listeners, what's the best place for them to be aware of all your stuff or find out about you? Where should they go online?
Well, I actually have a Facebook page that is called, let me look at it exactly, it is the Former Fundamentalist Reading Group, I think that's what I've called it, Former Fundamentalist Book Readers. And on that page, I list my books and also other books that I think are good for people who are coming out of fundamentalism or who have come out, or people who want to understand the epidemic of child molesting in Christian fundamentalist churches. You can also simply go to Amazon.com and Google my name, and you'll come up with both my fiction, which is very, very innocent fiction for children, and then also the nonfiction books, which are my books about clergy sexual abuse of children and fundamentalism.
So former fundamentalist book readers.
Yes.
Okay, great. And there's a picture of you, I think, as one of the people on there with a bullwinkle. Is that a bullwinkle?
Yeah, bullwinkle is my, that's my, my personal avatar, my Jerry Massey avatar. If you go to the page, the avatar for the former fundamentalist book readers avatar is actually the familiar silhouette of Billy Sunday preaching. It's a, it's him in silhouette striking
wow.
a dramatic pose as he preaches. And that's, that for many fundamentalists, that is sort of an iconic symbol. And so that's the, my, the avatar that I chose for the former fundamentalist book readers Facebook community. It's on Facebook.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you that, you know, you have really helped me connect the dots, because when my wife and I
Thank
were
you.
At Liberty, Jerry, there was a, we had a, this mandatory soul-winning class with a guy named J.O. Grooms, and one of the tools that he promoted was this video, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it was called The Burning Hell.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
You see,
yeah.
you're going, oh, yes, yes, my wife is wanting me to throw this out. It's a little argument we're having. She's like, throw that crap out, but I just hold on to it because it's so hard to believe. But this was something we were to show to people, and as you might remember in the film, people are burning in the flames
yeah,
and the worms and maggots.
Yeah, very manipulative.
Yeah, very
it's
scary,
a
very
manipulative. It's a very manipulative film, yeah.
And in the film, there's a bunch of pastors preaching about the wrath of God and hell and everything. But what's ironic to me is, now that we have some distance from all that, several of the preachers in the film are in your book as sexual predators. Bob Gray is in the film as one of the preachers
yes. Yes.
who went away to jail for molesting, what, over 20 kids, I think, right?
Yeah, although he never went to jail. He was arrested. They put
he
a bracelet on his ankle. They put a bracelet on his ankle and sent him home. As far as I know, he never spent a day in jail. If he ever did time in jail, it was one day before he was bailed out. You know,
wow.
And you have to think about this, Richard. If this was, you know, I'm sorry, an African American man who was charged mm-hmm. with 20 years of child molesting, he'd have been thrown in jail. But Bob Gray mm-hmm. walked right out, and it was 26 young people from his church. They were adults at the time, but they all went to the DA. And yet Bob Gray, the clout of Trinity Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida, is incredible. He really was only inconvenienced and certainly never showed any shame for anything he had done.
Mm. Well, he used to come to Liberty and be touted as one of the great men of God. And then
also
in that same film was Jack Howells. And Jack Howells and his son figure prominently in your book as
yeah.
well. Maybe can you tell us about them?
Well, Jack Hiles pastored First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana, and started Hiles Anderson College. He, for many years, billed himself as pastor of the world's largest Sunday school. He had an ongoing affair with a woman in his church, Jenny Nischick. He stole her away from Jenny's husband, Vic. Vic died this past year, and Vic actually is the one who broke the wall of silence. He wrote a book called Wizard of God, My Life with Jack Hiles, which I think you can get, if you search for it hard, you can get it as a PDF download.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack Hiles' son, Dave, was and is a devil, and was, you know, using girls sexually in the church youth group because he was, you know, Jack Hiles' son, but ultimately stole a woman from her husband and then broke up their marriage. And her son, Brent, was, I think he was about 15 months old when finally police detectives realized that he had been beaten all of his life. He had 8 broken bones in his body that had never been cared for. He was sent to hospital. He was removed from the home. Eventually, Dave and his second wife, Brenda, got him back. Paul Fiolino was a detective at the time. He warned the legal system that Brent would die if he went back into that home. But Brent was put back into the home, and within 3 months, Brent was dead. And Paul Cialino has never stopped insisting that Dave Hiles murdered Brent. There was an inquest, and Dave Hiles pleaded the fifth in that inquest, and the jury returned a verdict of suspicious death, but Dave was never able to, they were never able to indict and arrest Dave to charge him with it. And Dave went on into the ministry. He served down at Pinellas Park Baptist Church in Florida, where now they've changed their name to Cross Point, because what you find is as these churches get found out and it gets on the news, then the church will change its name. And so they're no longer associated with it. And I've seen that several times happen, where the church is caught as having harbored a child molesting preacher, or their own pastor was a child molesting preacher. They don't discipline the preacher. They don't do anything about it. They change the name of the church after the guy will leave, like he'll be fired out the back door. But Dave went on to Berean Baptist, and I was following him with a documentation trail. I would send it to the police. I sent it to the police in Pinellas Park. I sent it on to the police in Orange Park. And he left Berean Baptist, and that was Tom Neal, who's another Hiles clone. And I know he left there with a black eye. That's all I know, is that when he drove away, he had a black eye. Somebody punched him. So he was up to more mischief there.
Is Dave Hiles still in the ministry, do you know?
No, after Jack Hiles died in the early 2000s, Dave wrote a really sappy book about him called The Other Shore. But he, as far as I know, he's not gotten into the pulpit. My guess is he would if he could, but I think following him around, like notifying the police wherever he went, was something that was useful in getting him to stop, or putting pressure on churches, I think, has made it more difficult for him to get into the pulpit.
Mm. Well, you know what was really interesting to me was, you know, when people I knew were caught as pedophiles in the Baptist world, and by the way, as you know, this is such a big thing in Catholicism. I had a person on from SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. It was kind of a catalyst to the whole Spotlight film. But within fundamentalism, because I grew up Catholic, and I read from your book, you also grew up as a
yes,
kid Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they hated Catholics. They believed Catholics were, you know, the great whore, and Catholics weren't safe, and that Catholics are all these pedophiles. And the problem is Catholics, priests have to be celibate. But here we are now in the Baptist world, and these guys are married. All the pedophiles I knew, pedophile pastors that I knew in the Baptist world, of course I didn't know they were pedophiles until it came out, they were all married, they had kids, they had family. And I'm trying to figure out the big questions of what is it. I mean, did these sick movements attract sick people? When I watch Burning Hell, there's a lot of shame, a lot of condemnation in the preaching from Bob Gray and from Hiles and from these abusers. And a therapist friend of mine said that there's something called the reactive formation, that a person having this internal shame or this deep, dark secret becomes a person who shames others and projects it outward. And I'm just wondering what your take is on just the dysfunction. What is it about the independent Baptist world that perpetuates these pedophile people? And then, you know, if anyone even objected to the pastor or confronted him, they were labeled the Judas. They were labeled this terrible person, that this man of God might have had a little lapse. He might have strayed a little bit, but how dare you, you know, confront God's anointed, you know, that sort of thing. But what are some of the components you think that create this sick environment?
Well, I think entitlement is probably the number one reason that people molest children. I mean, I think there is, some people are, from a very early age, have a sexual drive to molest children. But it's interesting, in the few cases where I've been able to take a look at the person's life, there's actually not a history of them molesting a child until after they're a pastor. Bob Gray, there was nothing in his early life. There were no early arrests. There was nothing from his early life to point out that he was a child molester. And Charles Shiflett from Culpeper, Virginia, I had friends, he was their youth pastor in one church where the senior pastor kept him under control. And both these people who I know were in the youth group as teenagers at the time, and they said he never did anything to anybody. But when he got his own church, then he started molesting both boys and girls in his church. And it's pretty clear that it's a sense of entitlement they lavish things upon themselves, and of course there's always the running joke about all the fake honorary doctorates they're giving each other, but they
heap
honors on themselves, and then they get to the point where they start desiring forbidden things.
If I could interrupt you for a second, you're really connecting the dots here, because when I went to Liberty, they handed out these honorary doctorates right and left.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And Falwell was, you know, Dr. Jerry Falwell. All, you know, these figures in this world are always Dr. Jack. I was Dr. But Falwell's doctorate was honorary. And I'm not taking away from the achievements that he achieved and all that as a national figure, but I think that a lot of these abusers, that gives them even more of an elevation to where they can't be questioned, you know. In fact, you remember you mentioned Lester Roloff in your books. When I was at Liberty, I remember hearing in a sermon when Roloff, was it the 80s when the accusations about Roloff, do you remember? Because I heard about
you
it when
mean
I was
the criminal,
there, I think.
The criminal trials? When
yeah,
he
about
ran
Roloff
afoul of the
and
law?
Kids. Yeah, kids being abused at the home.
I think that started in the late 70s, and it may and it went into the 80s, but I think that actually even started in the 70s. But the state of Texas kind of warred with itself, I think, for a little bit, because he was taking children off the streets. And I think there were people, even in the legal system, who felt that he, as long as he was getting them off the streets, that was better than the streets. I think it took the legal system a while to know what to do with him, but eventually he was put in jail, at least for a few weeks. Because he wouldn't
comply. And by
comply,
the way, if you're listening, I want to encourage you to get Jerry's books. The Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers is one of them, Schizophrenic Christianity. Go on Amazon and find The Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers, Jerry Massey, M-A-S-S-I, and she has a Facebook site that we mentioned, which was, I think, former fundamentalist book readers community on Facebook. And you know, part of it, too, is the way these guys you can't question. When I was at Liberty, I remember a sermon. I have one of those kind of memories, you know, analog memory of remembering quotes and things I heard in a sermon. But I remember Falwell, when Roloff was accused of things, and he had this big booming voice. And I remember him saying that Lester Roloff was a man of God. And he said, if I walked into a room and found Lester Roloff with a young girl, lips pressed, kissing, I would assume it was mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and walk out the door. You know, it was that kind of thing that no matter what.
Well, he's an idolater. You know, right. Well, that's loyalty. And, you know, I do believe in the infallibility of the Bible, Richard. I actually am quite conservative. But when I actually laid out fundamentalism and its tenets against the Bible and looked at the Bible closely, there's a ton of things in Christian fundamentalism that are not at all according to Scripture, and the doctrine of loyalty is one of those things. The Bible never commends loyalty. It never even mentions it. You will not find the word loyalty anywhere in the Scripture. The New Testament gives us the law of love, which elevates the least members of the church, and fundamentalism inverts that and holds up the greatest, the most important members of the church, and insists that we have to be loyal to them. But that is absolutely contrary to what the Bible teaches us about our conduct as Christians in church. So the fundamentalist cult of loyalty, that's what I call it, is the only other place where you see it is like Nazism, the mafia. You know, it's not a good thing. It's not a commendable ideal. And it's that cult of loyalty that covers up these horrible cases. I think if people read the Big Book of Bad Baptist Preachers, just read one case after another, what will strike you, what really comes down hard, it came down hard on me as I was writing it, is the total indifference to the victims, that nobody mentions the victims when they're talking about these issues. They're sitting there crying for their child molesting preacher, but nothing for the victims.
I noticed that watching a thing on the Duggars, who were independent fundamental Baptists. Bill Gothard followers, and a friend of mine who's a comedian who came out of that movement, Brooke Arnold, has been on the show talking about that, the Duggars and that whole culture. I don't know if I'm saying the right name. Is it Duggars?
Duggars is just what I call them, the Duggars. I've never watched their show. I can't make myself watch it. I just feel so
Duggars.
Bad for those girls.
Yeah.
So I don't watch their show.
Well, one
but
of
I'm familiar
the boys,
with the scandals.
Yeah, I might be getting the details wrong, but one of the boys, I think it was Josh.
Josh.
He it came out he had sexually abused the sisters.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they had this big teary-eyed thing from the parents and the family. And I watched this interview, and it's exactly what you're saying, because the whole interview was, you know, Josh is a good guy, Josh is repentant, and we believe in a God of restoration for Josh, and Josh loves the Lord. And then it came out later that he was, a sex addict and finding women online and things like that. And yet he was involved in James Dobson's, you know, moral crusades for family and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
The thing in the whole piece about Josh this, Josh that, was it was 99.9% poor Josh, let's restore Josh. Hardly a mention of what are we doing to heal the sexual abuse victims.
Right, yeah, and I think the only thing they said about the girl she victimized was they went off to some retreat or something and quote, got counseling, which, again, is devastating if it was Gothard's counseling, because
oh
the whole
God,
new set
no.
of counseling, which is a counseling arm of fundamentalism, blames the victims, particularly if the victims are women. And I hasten to say this, I'm not opposed to feminists, but many people will write me off and say, you're just a feminist. I'm not a feminist. I actually am a very conservative Christian. And it doesn't bother me if people are feminists, but when people write me off and say, you're just a feminist, I'm not. But it is true that women in fundamentalism get blamed for anything men do sexually, that the women take the blame,
mm-hmm.
as though men had no control over themselves. So
yeah,
it's very sad,
it's funny,
women
like,
and children.
Yeah, even
go
the
ahead.
Roles, when we were at Liberty, you know, there was these roles to try, you know, so the women wouldn't be too tempting, like they would wear the long, you know, dresses and
right.
all that. And I remember it was, you know, Christ is compassionate and cares about the individual. I was reading last night in John 4 about the woman at the well and how he went out of his way to meet this one woman and to show the love of God and to minister to her. So he cares about women individually. But I remember at Liberty on a freezing day, these poor girls had on these thin, you know, dresses and skirts because we had a
oh, yeah.
And the cold wind is whipping up there and the blisters, you know, on their legs. And I was just new to this whole thing, but I was thinking, this is supposed to be Christian to make these women freeze in this dress because pants is some big sin if you wear pants to church. I mean, it was crazy.
Yes. Yeah. And shoes, you know, I went to Bob Jones and I remember days like that. And for some reason in cold weather, shoes with heels are agony. They always were for me. You would wish that you could just put your feet down in socks and boots when it's cold and slushy outside, but we had to dress what they called professional, all because of this mystique, I don't know, that I don't even understand. Yeah, it was ridiculous, and women in fundamentalism bear the brunt of a lot of the legalism, as do children, although, again, sincere young men can really suffer in fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. I learned that when I interviewed the victims of Charles Shiflett in Culpeper, that he really, that authoritarianism can also emasculate young men. And when you combine that with a preacher who sodomizes them, who rapes them, you know, the young men who I spoke to who were his victims, all of them showed high levels of stress, and they were in their late 20s and early 30s. And you just realize it's always going to be this way for them because of what this man did to them when they were 12 and 13 years old.
Mm.
That's a tragedy. It's so tragic.
And he did have some legal ramifications for him, but it wasn't a lot, was it? I mean, but he did have, he was one of the few that got into the system and had to go through the justice system, right?
All of the victims who would come together came together, and the DA struck a deal, and Shiflett entered what's called an Alford plea, where he took a guilty plea without admitting any true responsibility or guilt for what he'd done. In return, all the charges against him were reduced to misdemeanors, but one stayed a felony. So at that point, he was a felon, although he was given probation. And then a couple years later, many of his victims would go around videotaping him because they knew he was fraudulently claiming disability from the government. So they videotaped him, like mowing his lawn, chopping wood, doing things like that, and put together information and sent it to the state, what's the equivalent of the state attorney general in Virginia, and Shiflett went up on fraud charges, and he served 4 years for fraud.
Mm.
But this man is an incredible criminal, and he's pastoring again. You know,
the only
way anybody's going to know about Chuck Shiflett is because I wrote him into a book. No, the fundamentalists, the Baptists, aren't going to say they're not going to censure him, which the Bible commands that they do. I mean, 1 Timothy, Paul says about elders, them that sin, rebuke before all. The entire church is supposed to know about him. But in fundamentalism, it just gets covered up. Yeah, one of my contacts said that Shiflett had very quietly started a small church or taken over like a very small, sparsely membership church, and he was quietly pastoring that. Well, what else is he going to do? He's not going to do any honest work, and he doesn't know how to do anything else. So
wow.
Most of them do that. They go back into the ministry. Remember, Bob Gray, I mean, he was arrested. They were trying to get him indicted, and Trinity Baptist still honored him as their pastor. He's buried on Trinity's property with a stone, you know, to honor him. And he's nothing but a criminal, worse than a criminal.
You know, I wonder, too, what the sickness, the background. You mentioned that some of them, like Gray, it was hard to see anything in the background. Howell told a story. Now, I can just speak for myself, and your story also mentions growing up with a lot of chaos. A lot of myself and a lot of my friends, and this would include, of course, my wife, a lot of us came from very, very troubled home lives. In my case, my father had a bipolar disorder, and we had a lot of just drama and chaos and things that people didn't know about, but our home was unstable. So I was seeking out, you know, fundamentalism gives you that certainty. The Bible says this,
yeah.
And we got all
yeah.
the answers. And a lot of my friends that I bonded with at Liberty University were very, very troubled backgrounds, very, very dysfunctional, abusive backgrounds. Howells, I remember, told this dramatic story, and I don't know how much of it was true, Jack Howells, that, you know, about his dad being this drunk that beat him and things like that.
Oh, no, that wasn't true. No, that Vic Nischick, if you want to read his book, yeah, Vic actually explored Howells' background, and his dad divorced his mom because of her doting so much over Jack. That his dad found it unhealthy and abnormal. I'm sorry, but go ahead, Richard. But he had this whole... Actually, Richard, Jack Hiles took that story from the biography of J. Frank Norris, the true
that's
founder of fundamentalism.
Yeah, I heard
yes,
that
he stole that
story
from J. Frank Norris's, yes.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up, because it seemed like a dramatic thing that he used for manipulative effect. So I'm trying to figure out how much of these guys' stories was BS to make you feel for them, and how much of these guys were flawed and therefore gravitated towards, because of the abuse growing up, life was so out of control as a kid, they gravitated toward being this big controlling Baptist preacher. I don't know. Is there anything in the background of some of these preachers that, do you think that people that come from sick backgrounds are gravitate towards this type of a movement?
Well, I
or?
Think there is the authoritarian father figure. A psychologist did tell me that people who are like injured and wounded early in life feel a great deal of uncertainty about themselves, that because they didn't have that father saying, you know, I have confidence in you, go ahead, try it, you know, try it and I'll support you. So and that psychologist did really zero in more than Bob Jones or Jerry Falwell. She really saw in Jack Hiles, you know, this is that father figure who at once is remote and lofty and authoritarian, but then because of his extraordinarily good pulpit skills, brings himself with his stories to a deep one-on-one. Each person has a sense of a one-on-one relationship with him. And Jack Hiles was a very good pulpiteer, horrible man.
Yeah.
And the
yeah,
stuff he said wasn't true.
Yeah, he was
but
amazing.
He was good at
even,
it.
Even when he was under accusation for the whole affair with the mistress, Jenny Nischick, was it?
Nischick, yeah.
I remember him giving a sermon, and it went around the Baptist circles, refuting the whole thing and talking about how horrible what a wimp her husband was and what kind of a wimp
yes,
would allow
yeah, call him a wimp.
You know,
yeah.
You know, bullying
yeah.
the husband and how it's all and how Jenny is this paragon of morality and Jack Howell's wife is a paragon of Christian virtue
yeah.
and I'm wondering is he knowingly lying to save his ass, excuse my French, or is he, you know, lying to protect the virtue of these women, or is it a survival thing because he knows his reputation's at stake, or is he so mentally deluded he kind of believes this? I mean, what do you think?
I think that Jack Hiles would package himself any way he could to survive, and I don't think it bothered him if he was lying or not. I don't think that even occurred to him. I think he viewed life and his control as a strategy. So he was waging a war or issuing a campaign like a politician, and he just had to do whatever it took to hold his life and his ministry together and to stay where he was in the high esteem of his church. But I don't think he cared if it was true or not. I don't think it even entered his head.
Mm. Wow. You know, I have to, I'm kind of shocked that our time's gone. It's just gone so by so fast. But why don't we end, would you mind, by the way, if you're listening, get Jerry Massey's book on Amazon, Bad Baptist, the big book of Bad Baptist preachers, Jerry Massey, J-E-R-I-M-A-S-S-I. But you've done the Conference for the Lambs and Things to Heal People Who Have Been Molested as Kids in Church. What would you say in closing, Jerry, to someone that's been abused, be it the sexual abuse or even the spiritual abuse of being in some of these legalistic churches? What can someone do to heal? What would you say to them in terms of, you know, resources or what they can do to recover and move forward in life?
Well, therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy that focuses on mindfulness has been shown to be very helpful for people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, which, by the way, I have now from the years of the threats and stuff that I went up against. So, you know, I understand where you're at. Many people cannot afford it. I can't afford the therapy. But I would say trying to learn about mindfulness, meditation, prayer, and above all else, you really need to get clear that this is not who Jesus is and this is not what Christianity is. I think many people are troubled because they want to believe in Jesus, but this is so offensive to them at the very core of their beings. But so there's two things. There's your mental health, which, you know, you would have to try to find the resources in your area to help you if you have PTSD, which if you were sexually abused in a church or went through years of high stress in a church, you probably do have or you could have. But then there's also just the religious side. Is Christ real? Is Christianity real? And I am a Christian and devout, but I understand when victims say, I can't believe in Jesus anymore, and I really don't want to arm lock anybody into it. So I encourage people, just read the Gospels for yourself, apart from all the other stuff. Just read the Gospels and feel free, you know, freely ask God. Tell God where you are in your faith and don't expect it to get resolved tomorrow. It may take the rest of your life because these are the most important questions in the world. Who is God? Does he love me? Should I love my enemy? Should I forgive my enemy? How do I live my life day by day to be a good person? Those are questions that do take years to walk out and answer. So you got to be patient with yourself, patient with the universe. And anytime you find anybody that loves you, make sure that you're thankful that you have that person who cares about you.
Great, great advice. You know, my son Joshua, who's in the studio with us today, he has said the same thing to people. You want to know who Jesus is, just read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I have to tell you real quick before the pull the plug, we're going over time, but everything you've said has helped me in my healing process. I do therapy, cognitive therapy.
Good.
A good Christian therapist who since went to heaven, Glenda Moser in Pittsburgh, diagnosed me PTSD, which was a huge light to go on for me. And the meditation has been huge in my life, mindfulness meditation. Jerry, you are fantastic, and I can't thank you enough
for
coming on, and I hope everyone will get your book, and they're about to pull the plug. So thank you for coming on. God bless you.
Thank you. You too, Richard. Thanks a lot, and God bless you.
You're welcome, and God bless all of you for listening. And like she said, make sure you go after the real Jesus, not the religious Jesus. The real Jesus is love.